So let's take item 753, please.
Adopt the Southeast Quadrant Plan as direction for updating the Central City Plan.
Well, good afternoon and welcome, everyone. Let me open this hearing and welcome our team to the table. We don't get a lot of chances as a city to think about the big picture, but that's what this part of the planning process is really about, and to think about the path forward for a part of the city that's very dynamic. A lot of you have been involved in this part of the city for some time, and we look forward to hearing from all of you. I think it's important to remember that in the 1980s, when the last Central City Plan was written, we were a pretty different place. Employment was down, crime was up. Central City was a place that a lot of people maybe didn't want to spend as much time and energy and investment as they do now. Obviously, now the Central East Side is really an economic marvel, and it's doing very well, and we're dealing with the problems of growth and demand more than we are with the problems of disinvestment or dysfunction. So I'm very interested in this part of the city, have been for a long time. I'm really interested in the work that you've done together. I want to appreciate Susan and Joe and Troy, the work that you as a bureau have done in preparing this proposal for the council and working so effectively with the community. There are a lot of strong opinions and strong personalities involved in this planning process, as I got to see when I had a chance to visit your committee meetings. And I just want to commend the work that the bureau's done and that the community's done in collaborating on taking on a lot of tough questions and queuing them up for the council to take up today. So thank you for work well done and for something that this council is ready to dig into with you. Welcome.
Thank you, Mayor, Commissioners, Susan Anderson, Director of the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability. And with me today are Troy Doss, who's Senior Planner, and Joe Zenner, Chief Planner. As the mayor indicated, we're here today to present the Southeast Quadrant Plan. The plan does reflect the thoughts and deliberations of really probably a couple hundred people, residents and businesses involved, and it is recommended by the Planning and Sustainability Commission. While there's many, many different key issues as a part of this plan, I want you to really kind of focus your attention on just four things to start with. The first is probably the most obvious. As the mayor said, the Central East Side is a 21st century industrial district now. It has made some changes over the years. It has a diversity of jobs now. It has a diversity of industries. We have 18,000 jobs currently in the district and a forecast for 27,000 jobs by 2035. The jobs are for a variety of people, for a variety of industries, and for a variety of skills and education. And I think that in our economy right now, that's really important. A second focus area is that we are creating two very fantastic transit stations as a part of this at OMSI and at Clinton Station. These will be vibrant employment areas that are built on and that will depend upon great transit for their growth and their success. As you know, Portland for three decades has been a national, if not international, leader on the issue of transit and land use and how those come together. Along the way, we've kind of shown the world that transit-oriented development, that we know how to do that, and we know how to do that around mixed use and around housing. And now in the Central East Side, we're going to show that we can do transit-oriented development for jobs and industry, too. A third area of focus in the plan is the waterfront. The plan will help ensure that the Central East Side is a vibrant waterfront destination. We are planning for more access. We are planning for more business opportunities and a quality environment. And finally, throughout the plan, we focused on the whole idea of change. And businesses told us that they can thrive in the midst of change. A good example of this is how all of the parties came together to mix freight and transit and bikes and pedestrians and cars. The Freight Committee, BTA, the Bicycle Transportation Alliance, and other stakeholders really coalesced to provide and build a framework that will enhance freight operations and provide for bike and ped safety throughout the district. So again, four things to think about: jobs and industry on transit, a vibrant waterfront with great environment, and great transportation and business options. You know, the great part about this plan, and sometimes I end up not always getting to say this about all the work that we do, is how all the bureaus really work together. I really want to thank my fellow bureau directors for their efforts and for the efforts of their staff, especially Troy Doss with BPS, Geraldine Moyle with PDC, and Art Pierce at PBOT. We started calling them the three amigos. They were together at all times, it seemed, for the past 2 years. And the two co-chairs, Don Hansen and Debbie Kitchen. They and a lot of other people brought this plan together. I'm going to turn it over now to Joe and to Troy to provide a very brief kind of overview of the plan. Thank you.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Commissioners. Joe Zender, Chief Planner with the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability. What we're asking you today is shown in this slide. It's to adopt by resolution the Southeast Quadrant Plan and sort of to direct us to take this as guidance to complete the Central City 2035 plan, including the implementing codes. That's what's coming next. Just to remind you, what we've already completed in the Central City Plan is the concept plan for the whole Central City, two of the other quadrant plans, the Northeast and the West, and this is the last of those four quadrant plans. The other work that's being poured into developing the final code and the plan itself deals with the FAR bonus and transfer, part of which is what we're going to talk about tomorrow, and scenic resources, zoning code we have to develop. And by July of 2016, as our objectives, we're bringing back that complete package to City Council. The way we developed this plan over the last 18 months or so involved a significant amount of public process and actually two sort of studies that we ran concurrently, where we jumped on taking an analysis of the inner the Clinton Station area so that we were able to try to advance our development thinking about this soon-to-be-opened light rail station, and then the Southeast Quadrant Plan itself. And the work of the plan was overseen by a 30-person stakeholder advisory group, and it was a group that worked very hard and worked in a very productive way, in unique way sometimes, but productive in the end and reached consensus on this project. And we had a lot of other opportunities for public outreach. Finally, just to remind everybody what we're talking about today in terms of geography, the Central East side is shown in blue on this this slide. When we look out 20 years, we're expecting 9,000 more jobs minimum in the Central East side. That's a lot, and that's a significant portion, a significant contribution to what we're looking for out of the city as a whole. That's going to be spread over 706 acres. There's that much sort of space or land or sites in the Central East side. A lot of jobs, but there's a lot more capacity in the Central East side for jobs than just that even 9,000 acres. So we're going to see change, but it's not wholesale change. And that's been part of why we think the Central East side has been successful from staying the course on an industrial sanctuary. It's got 24 acres per job today. And for an industrial district, those are typically in the single district. So this is a very successful place. We're adding flexibility. We're adding the opportunity for more types of businesses to be there so that we can even increase more beyond that 24 jobs per acre. And we're doing it in a way that we think will keep the district in balance economically because there's, even though we're talking about a significant amount of change, it's not wholesale change of the whole district. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Troy to go through the details of the plan.
All right. Good afternoon. I'm going to walk you through some of the just big highlights of the plan. We started off with our stakeholder group and really set four primary project goals that everyone collectively agreed to. One was trying to get to our expanded employment opportunities, increased employment densities. As noted, we have a projection of about 9,000 jobs by 2035. It could be as high as 12 or 14,000 additional jobs. But either way, we know that even at 9,000 jobs, current zoning doesn't get us there. So we have to find a way to get there with some better working with the tools we have. At the same time, we want to protect the industrial businesses that are there. And we're seeing a lot of growth in housing in the district. There are some incompatibility issues along the border between where housing and industry exist, and we want to make sure that we can get those addressed. So we've kind of long been overlooked. There's also issue about what do we do with these new station areas? We have two significant investment in light rail in this district. We have two new vibrant station areas coming on. We want to make sure that they're safe, places that are attractive and for people to go, as well as attractive for investment. And then lastly, we have a great opportunity here to recreate the waterfront there. This is one of the four places on the east side of the Willamette in the city of Portland. You can actually get down and touch the water. Yet there's not a great opportunity to do that here yet. We think we can build around the assets of OMSI and the Spring Water Trail and other development at the station area to make that happen. In doing so, though, one of the things we heard was there were seven primary priorities that the stakeholders said, if we're going to do all this, we need to make sure that, one, we really expand our industrial protections. We may be expanding what it means to be industry, but we want to make sure that we are protecting all industries at the same time. We want to maintain and enhance our parking supply and our management tools. We want to enhance freight mobility. Freight is going to continue to be a part of this district as it grows. We want to see that we can balance the needs of our multimodal transportation needs, because we do have a number of modes that are coming through, transit, bikes, beds, as well as auto. We want to see what the innovation quadrant's extension from across the Tillicum Crossing into the district can mean for this area, so expanding the innovation quadrant. And we want to look at how we better utilize some of the mixed-use corridors that exist in the district. I think one of the things that's overlooked a lot is that MLK, Grand, Burnside, Morrison, they're all zoned in similar ways in which the Pearl is zoned, high-density mixed-use development. Yet we really haven't seen a response to that zoning pattern. It's been in place for 25 years until like the last 24 months. And then lastly, we want to figure out how to overall enhance the livability of the district. And that means everything from urban forestry to parks and open space. I'm going the wrong way. So the first layer of this would be land use. And what we're really doing is expanding an existing tool, and we'll get to that in a little more detail in a second, but we're looking at expansion of the employment opportunity subarea to all IG1 zone properties in the district. We're looking at rezoning the two station areas. OMSI would receive a mix of EX no housing and EX with housing as conditional use. And then the Clinton station area, which would be brought into the central city, currently it's outside the central city, wedged between the Hand and Brooklyn neighborhoods, that would come in as a mixed-use zoning or residential commercial mixed-use zone. The big move here is really the employment opportunity subarea. So currently, if you look at the image on the right, on the left, that will show you the existing subarea. And that is approximately 48 acres. Came into effect in about 2006. It's been an incredibly successful tool. It allows for what we call industrial office or creative office space. These are new industries that have come along since the adoption of the industrial sanctuary. Software companies, software and web development, graphic and industrial design, another and studios as well. We have found a tremendous response to this. During the recession, growth was growing in this area by around 7-8% annually, created 1,000 jobs when most of the rest of the city was hanging on. Since that time, it's created about another 1,000 jobs. At the same time, has not displaced the existing businesses that were there. So it's been a very effective tool. There seems to be a lot of support for expanding this district-wide. One of the things we're doing with that as well is right now we want to enhance what the use allowances are for that zone. So right now we're a little restrictive. It would say you can only do 60,000 square feet of that use per site. We'd like to change that to an FAR ratio of 3-1. The basis for that being that a site is defined by ownership. It could be a 1-acre site. It could be a 5-acre site. 60,000 square feet is kind of a small limitation. The other thing we wanted to do, though, is also protect the district from significant traditional office and retail growth. So striking a compromise in the expansion of the EOS, what we were able to do was minimize the amount of retail you can build currently as a conditional use in the IG1 zone. It's 20,000 square feet, and lower it to 5,000 max. And with regard to traditional office, it would also be 20,000 square feet down to 5,000 in these new IG1 areas. We'd also be removing the conditional use of up to 60,000 square feet of traditional office in the existing EOS. So what we're really trying to do is say, this is a district where industry is what we're really focusing on, not traditional office, not retail. The next thing is to look at, as the district continues to grow, as I mentioned, we're starting to see housing response on the corridors. When we started this project in 2010, we found that there was about 960 to maybe 1,000 residential units in the district. Currently, there's about 1,300 either on the books or being constructed in the district. It's in the last 24 months. So one of the things we want to make sure is that we're protecting what's happening, because that housing is typically occurring across the street from industry. And so what we want to do is make sure that new development that's coming in is recording a covenant, disclosing the fact that, acknowledging the fact that I, as a new tenant or a new developer, am building an industrial district. My tenants in the future are going to have the charm of an industrial district. They're going to experience truck loading. They're going to experience noise and fumes and maybe different hours of operation than you might find in other residential neighborhoods, because this is not a residential neighborhood. And so they're disclosing the fact that that's there, that will run with the property in perpetuity. And as long as those operations are occurring in a lawful manner, the city is not going to take action against those complaints. And then the next thing we want to do is take a second look at the development standards and design guidelines that are along that interface. One of the things that happens is you can be going down a street like 3rd Avenue or 6th Avenue and find that one side is zoned EX high density, the next across the street zone IG1. However, the development standards are so different on those two, the only separation is really 60 feet of right-of-way. We want to find out how do we maybe treat the interface a little differently, not expecting that that is the strongest pedestrian environment or that's the highest design area. Maybe that's more of the back-of-house functions for those EX developments, and do that in a way that's putting a little bit less pressure or conflict against the industrial zonings across the street. The next three things we'll talk about before we close this up is transportation strategies. This plan really has been about as much land use as has been transportation. One of the things we really want to be mindful of is the continued need to address freight in this district. It's going to be a factor as long as this district is an employment area. And it's a district-wide freight designation. But there are some improvements that we could make to better get freight east-west through the district. Right now, you may know there's only 3 signalized intersections along MLK Grand. Makes it very hard for any mode to get across that area. So we see them queuing up in one space, all modes. So one of the things we propose to doing is putting some more signalized intersections on key north-south routes, allowing for that east-west mobility to occur, but then creating some one-way streets for freight, as kind of preferential streets, where they'll be able to have a better turn movements and a better route to get to the key streets they're trying to get to east to west. At the same time, we want to do the same thing for the bike and the pedestrians coming through the district. We know that the inner southeast neighborhoods here have a 23% commute to work by bike mode split. It's the highest in the city, it's highest in the region. And they're coming through this district today, and those numbers are probably likely to grow. So one of the things we want to do is give them some routes that really get them east-west through the district as safely as possible, giving them one route that's very safe, giving freight another route that's very safe, and not trying to combine them necessarily on the same routes. We're also trying to memorialize some of these improvements by enhancing our existing transportation system plan to identify where some of these newer hierarchy of streets will occur, both for freight and for bike and ped. And then lastly, parking is always an issue in this district. We have a finite supply of on-street parking, and we have a pretty vast supply of off-street parking that currently can't be used due to some code restrictions that date back 20 years. When Park and Ride and Fairless Square were a factor that had people kind of leaving their car on the central east side and either walking or busing across the bridges to the west side. So one of the things we want to do is continue working with the Central East Side's Transportation and Parking Management Association to get a better sense of how to manage that on-street supply. But in the meantime, we want to open up the off-street supply to allow that to be used by customers, businesses, and residents of the district. Because right now, if I own a surface parking lot and Joe owns a surface parking lot, but he's out of space, I can't allow him to use that my space is by a code restriction. By eliminating that room one prohibition, we can open up about 3,000 to 4,000 parking spaces overnight. So that's something we want to be pursuing. And our long-term strategy will also start to involve district parking. I know that PDC is looking at a district parking facility as part of the redevelopment of the ODOT blocks. We want to look as the district starts to grow and become denser, where other locations where maybe a district parking or district parking incentives for structured parking becomes something we want to put into play. So with that, I want to close by saying thank you to our stakeholder advisory group. We've worked with this group of 30 very diverse interests in the district over the last 2 years, both as part of the stationary work and as the quadrant work. This is just a small sample of the various staff that worked on this plan. And I know many of them are in the room right now. I can't call them all out by name, but I really want to thank everybody. This has been a fantastic team, and I've been proud to lead this effort. So with that, I open up to any questions you may have.
Okay, questions for the Bureau right out of the gate. I'm sure there will be more along the way. So thank you very much. I want to call first of some planned presenters, our co-chairs, Don Hansen and Debbie Kitchen.
Mayor Hales and Council Don Hansen. I'll be very brief with my comments. There are a lot of people that want to speak today, and I want to hear them. I am a volunteer on the Planning and Sustainability Commission, and as part of that role, I volunteered to co-chair this advisory committee with Debbie, who's with me today. And I was happy to do that. I grew up in Southeast Portland, and one of my favorite jobs in high school was working in the district. I delivered produce at night. It was such an interesting environment, trucks in that small district. Languages of choice were Italian and Japanese, and it was really just a fascinating district, and it's been fun for me to watch it change and watch it evolve through the years. I want to talk about, and I think that experience really going to help me understand what the advisory committee was absorbing and the decisions they were making. First, I want to brag about my advisory committee. Excellent group of stakeholders. The neighborhoods were well represented with Buckman and Hand. Willamette River Keepers were on the committee. Also, people that own property and operate businesses. The people that were truly going to be impacted by the decisions were there at the table all the way through. And they were very engaging over a number of months. And I'm sure they'll engage with you today, so you'll hear from them directly. Staff has put forward a solid plan from my perspective. It's very balanced. Troy listed out all the factors considered and the decisions made. But I'll say something really simple about their approach. They listened. They listened to the committee. They listened to the neighboring groups. And they altered their decision-making process based on that input. It was truly an engaging proposition. The last thing I want to talk about, so I think it's a great framework for the district moving forward. There may be some details that will come out today, but framework is foundational and very solid. I want to put in a plug for the Green Loop while I'm here. It was presented to our advisory committee, and I think it's a great big idea for Portland. It involves the west side, it involves the east side, and could be a very unifying element on the central east side without impacting freight movement and everything else. I think it'd be solid, a solid proposition for businesses that are there now, for bicyclists, just for the whole environment. So I wanted to mention that. So I'm in full support of the plan, obviously, because I chaired the advisory committee, but I just think it's a collection of very good ideas. So thank you.
Thank you. Debbie, welcome.
Thank you, Mayor and Commissioners. I'm Debbie Kitchen, and I was also co-chair of the Stakeholder Advisory Committee and also serve as president of the Central East Side Industrial Council. We do have comments that the Central East Side Industrial Council submitted, and we sent some of those earlier, but there's a new Exhibit 1 that is part of that that includes a list of, and I wanted to call it to your attention, because we often hear that there aren't many industrial companies in the Central East Side anymore, or that most of them have been around a long time and they aren't, that sector isn't growing, but actually we put together just very quickly kind of a partial list that just showed the new ones that in the last 5 years that have either had major expansions or new locations in the Central East Side. And it shows a diverse set of businesses. And so I guess what I wanted to say was that I think this plan for the Southeast Quadrant is a good compromise. It does retain the industrial sanctuary. It does retain the freight district. It does allow new businesses to come in the employment overlay. It has all kinds of plans for strengthening the corridors and taking advantage of that aspect. You know, we've always had, as Troy said, we've always had that zoning, and it hasn't really been activated in the way that it could. So the Stakeholder Advisory Committee and staff work together from all the bureaus to look at a number of issues, and I think this, I would call this plan a compromise that we can live with and that we can build on as we go through the next phases of, you know, taking it and then elaborating it even more. So I think, speaking on behalf of the CEIC, although we had some detailed comments that you've included, I'm not going to really go over those. Really, I think we're happy with the amendments that are being put forth today, support those, and would just like to say that we benefited a lot from our work with staff and the Stakeholder Advisory Committee. I think we were able to come forward with a plan that does keep the industrial sanctuary and does allow this really exciting mix of businesses that have come there to stay and thrive. And so I think it's, in that sense, it is a great success.
But just for clarification, this memo that you just gave us has several action items. Are those new requests for amendments?
No, some of these we've actually worked on the amendments. So the amendments that were included yesterday do cover those, many of those things. This was adopted by our board meeting in June, and we've continued to work with staff and the Portland Freight Committee and others to meet many of those objectives.
So everything here is covered. You're not asking for additional amendments right now?
No.
Great. Thank you very much.
Debbie, there seems to be one area where you're asking us to consider a further protection, and that's under the right to be industrial policy.
So yes.
Your commentary is that the industrial disclosure statement is not sufficient, and there should be an additional level of protection to protect against what you describe as complaints issued due to noise, smell, loading, et cetera, by virtue of industrial.
And what I think we envision with that is we don't have that disclosure statement now at this time, and so those details are going to be worked out, and we would like to see that strength be a very strong statement and have rules about how it is used both when properties are sold and leased throughout the district. So those details will be worked out in the I guess you could have an amendment that would direct staff to, you know, look at it in that way and see areas that could be strengthened or some elements like that. But we didn't have specific language about that at this point.
Okay. Thank you.
So perhaps this might be the right moment, since you're the co-chairs. We have these staff, this package of staff proposed amendments. So I take it you and the committee recommend we adopt those.
Yes.
Okay. Yes. So I think it might be appropriate, even before we carry on into the rest of the hearing, that we take action to accept these amendments. And then again, people can testify on both the plan itself that you've developed and the amendments that staff have developed. So I'm not sure if we've all got these. I hope we do.
I think I need another copy, Mayor.
Okay. So Joe or Troy, have we got copies for the council of the amendments? We might want to even bring them back up and walk us through those first before we go on. So thank you very much.
And Mayor, there is one where I'm proposing to amend the amendment. The staff agrees with my proposed amendment to the amendment, but it's not technically the initial.
And Troy, you might want to come up and just walk us through this set of amendments, just so the six amendments, so that everybody knows what we're talking about.
Sure. Let me locate that a second.
What, you don't have them memorized? Come on.
Boy, one more thing. First of all, thanks again to BPS and to staff for providing the cheat sheet for us. I mean, this is the model on how we do amendments, and you guys said. Thank you also for blowing it up so I can read it. And just in terms of protocol, as you go through each amendment, are you okay with taking questions on each one?
Sure.
Okay.
Okay, so Amendment 1 is the change of a comp plan designation and rezoning in response to a property at the east end of the Morrison Bridge. When 1990, when these zoning went into effect to implement the Central City Plan, most of the bridgehead development or most of the bridgehead parcels were zoned OS, open space, because they were believed to have all been owned by Multnomah County. There was one oversight. One of those parcels, the parcel in question, was actually owned by the Bollinger family and remains so today. It's a surface parking lot and has been for decades. They'd like to see it rezoned the way all of the private development in that area had been zoned, which is EX, Central Employment. And we think that is fine. It's consistent with the rest of the zoning in that corridor. So, Amendment 2 is adding an action item which would be dealing with maker economy. I know that there will be some testimony on this from Kelly Roy with AVX Portland, and she may want to change or recommend a change as to who the implementer would be. But what we're really trying to do here is make sure that we're addressing that you know, there's a strong growing maker economy in the Central East Side as part of that diverse economic structure occurring. And we'd like to make sure that existing financial tools can be kind of looked at again, maybe some new ones developed, to really help broaden and support the growth of the maker economy in the Central East Side. Amendment 3 is language that came out of our conversations that Debbie referenced with the CEIC and the Portland Freight Committee, and it's changing an existing action regarding the Green Loop. And basically what it's really trying to do is ensure that when in the final alignment or infrastructure design is created to implement a green loop over there, that it's done with freight operations in mind, that we're going to be very mindful. We're not going to put it on a place that's going to degrade freight operations. It's going to try to avoid them to the extent possible. But even then, the infrastructure can be done in a way that leaves freight harmless. We want to make sure that this amendment directs that approach. Amendment 4, Clinton Station area. So during the development of the plan, we found that clear visions for both the Clinton Station, and you could say the same of the OMSI Station, for how that site would be developed that would allow us to implement development standards, design guidelines, heighten FAR ratios, knowing that with some certainty that this is what was going to be developed. We just didn't have enough clarity from the major landowners and any of the station owners to do that. So in lieu of that, what we proposed is that a master plan provision be in effect and that we would change the zoning to EX, but we would only give them an FAR ratio of 1:1 and a height of about 100 feet at OMSI and 75 feet at Clinton. The basis being that you could earn more height and FAR through the development of a master plan. At that point, there'd be a better analysis of what the massings would be like, how views would be protected, what the public benefit from that additional development entitlement would be. A lot of the considerations would go in, and that would be handled through a public process. Now, if we had more certainty, we probably could have zoned around that. Now we don't have that. So one of the things that's been asked by some folks who own property at the Clinton Station was if we were able to develop that kind of a vision before the zoning is finalized, because we're going to be doing that over the next year, could that be substituted instead of a master plan requirement? That will be a public process. We'll be developing that code language as part of the final Central City 2035 plan over the next 12 months. So if they were able to do that, we could consider that, and that's what this amendment is putting forward.
Could you remind us what the geographic scope of this is without having to turn to page V5 and, yeah. and what the city-owned properties are in that?
So it's largely what's known as the Clinton Triangle. So it's the areas that are east of Milwaukee and between Powell and the light rail and railroad alignment. So it is where the Gideon Fire Station facilities are located. And the other half of the property is owned by Stacy and Whitbeck. And it's mostly vacant property, although there is one, I believe, a contracting supply business that is still located there. So collectively, there are some small pieces of property at the Clinton Station owned by TriMet, very thin band. The majority of the property there is owned by the city or by Stacy and Whitbeck.
So my concern was that a public the master planning process is a full public process where the development agreement can be fully vetted, and that it's a specific opportunity for neighbors to weigh in with a defined public process. Going to a development agreement, as we've just discovered on Zidell, has only opportunities for citizens to come in towards the end when the agreement's already made. So I'm proposing to delete this amendment. And the staff agrees with me, but wanted to forward it for completeness.
Okay.
I'm officially confused since the cheat sheet says adopt as consent item.
And I don't think you were suggesting a development agreement, right?
No.
The situation here is that you got a legislative planning process underway, and you've got parcels. I assume this would be similar to the situation at OMSI or else, if you think about the Northeast Quadrant, the Blanchard site, where you got a property owner who's got a big piece of property, they've got some notions about how they might develop it, but it hasn't been clarified yet. And we have the book open, in effect, because we're working on the comp plan. And you could, as a property owner, come forward with a specific development plan at that point with design guidelines and get it adopted. Or you could not do that and come back later and go through the master plan process, right?
Yes. So, for instance, the Blanchard site's a great example. The post office site in the River District or the Pearl is another example. If there was some clarity that came forward while we're developing the final code as part of that public process, that could be something that could be supplant doing the master plan. It would be just as much public process, if not more in some ways, because it would still be going to the Planning Commission, probably seeking advice from the Design Commission, and then coming back to this body as well. So there would be plenty of opportunities to help shape those plans.
That's actually what we're doing with the post office, right? We have a planning process underway.
It has just started, yes.
It's not necessarily going to result in a conditional use master plan. It might result in a plan district proposal or something like it that goes into the comp plan. Okay.
I want to make sure I'm on track here. So, Commissioner Fritz, are you saying that you do not support the additional language that's added?
Correct.
Okay. So, all right. So we'll come back to that.
Okay. So I'm a little confused. You don't support the underlying language or the whole language?
No, the whole language is what's currently in there, and that's fine. I don't support removing the requirement for a master plan, because this whole comp plan is going to be so complicated and huge that it's going to be very challenging for citizens to participate at an adequate level of detail in planning this site, which, after all, is really kind of quasi-judicial. It's the city and Stacy and Whitbeck. So it's very site-specific and needs to go through a master planning process, in my opinion.
Well, help us understand, I guess, BPS. This says that the requirement for a master plan will be waived. So who has the authority to waive it, and what effectively is the trigger, and what role do we play in that?
So you would be the one waiving it, effectively. Because what we would be doing is, when we bring back Central City 2035 and the new zoning proposals for the entire Central City, including the Clinton Station, we could be saying, we think there's enough clarity here and enough shared vision that this could be adopted. We could develop the height, the floor area ratios, the development standards now, and not require a master plan process as a subsequent process, as a quasi-judicial process.
Well, so forgive whether this is a really dumb question, but why would you need an amendment to do something which theoretically you could do, you could decide to do, come to us for a waiver? What does this give you that you don't have already in terms of seeking a waiver under certain circumstances?
Nothing.
Yeah, actually, just clarification. Now that I think about this, if this was a little more accurate, it would say then the requirement for a master plan would not necessarily be imposed, right?
Yes.
We're not going to require a master plan until this is all done. And you're saying we might not require a master plan if they get their act together beforehand.
What we've been basically, I mean, another way of saying this too would be, we want there to be a public process. We want there to be certainty on both ends of the scale on as to what's going to happen at this site. We don't want to just zone it now and hope for the best. So we want to have some ability for there to be some public review and input as how this comes together. That could either occur through the development of the final package for Central City 2035, or it can happen as a quasi-judicial process. If that doesn't happen, it'd have to happen then through a quasi-judicial process as a master plan.
Let's say a majority of the council signaled that the bar would be very high to waive this requirement. Would that discourage BPS from going down this path, or would you still want to have the discretionary right to do this?
I think the bar's high anyway, so I don't know that it makes a difference one way or the other. Perhaps I'm confused by the question.
Well, I'm just trying to address Commissioner Fritz's concern that she's apparently not comfortable taking this out of a master planning process, also wants to make sure there's an adequate public process. What I'm learning is that it still is within our discretion to waive it or not,
and
that has to be done through a public process. But if this language is in there, we may be signaling to you that at your discretion, you'll put staff resources and go through a process and come to council with that. Am I on the right track?
You know, I believe you are. What we're really saying is that if the parties can come together with the plan between now and the time we're actually adopting the code that goes with the Central City plan, and that plan that is developed, the more specifics for the site, can be done in a way that's acceptably public and vetted, we could just accept that based on review and based on your all's sanction and based on the planning and sustainability's approval as the zoning for the site. It's almost like the need and the purposes of doing a master plan will have been satisfied. The planning and staff and then the Planning and Sustainability Commission and then the city council are going to have to judge that, yeah, that those, you know, the purposes of the master plan have been met and we can accept this. If any of those bodies find this is not true, that's not going to proceed forward. You still have a master plan option down the road.
Colleagues, I remind you that when we adopted the amendment to the urban renewal area, we had a pretty intensive discussion about affordable housing at this site. I suggest that having a master plan process might allow more discussion of what kinds of uses than a purely zoning code discussion of the map amendment.
If you want to weigh in on this, Susan,
I just wanted to say this is not the only site in the central city where this exact same situation is showing up. So we have Conway, we have
Post Office, we have OMSI, we have Centennial Mill.
Right.
But those sites are all subject to master plans?
Well, they're all, you know, at this level in the quadrant plan for the west side, it includes language that says consider and sort of go develop a master plan provision for those sites. In this plan, I believe we're calling for it in OMSI. And I believe we called for it in Blanchard already, so you've already done this in the Northeast Quadrant.
And that's a conditional use master plan? Or is that when we say master plan, what are we talking about?
Correct, Mayor. It's what we're talking about is inventing, it's a provision that says if you're over a certain size and these sites are, what we really want to see is before we put the zoning down on it, sort of a master plan for how you think the site's going to develop.
What is that legally? What are we talking about? Is this a conditional use master plan that a property owner applies for? Is this a legislative document that we approve?
The way we did it in Conway was we established sort of a zoning ceiling for what Conway could do, and set up principles in it for what the development had to accomplish, use those in a quasi-judicial process. I don't know if it's technically a conditional use, but it was a new process that BDS, through public process, says this plan accomplishes those criteria of what you wanted to do on this, so you have access to this higher level of zoning. That's the master plan provision we've used so far. We also have a different version of that in Gateway, but it's never been used. Yeah. It's sort of... And the Conway is a good example. Generally, redevelopment of Conway site at certain levels was acceptable to the neighborhood, and we could prove that it could meet the traffic impacts. But there was still concern about how the details of that and some of the specifics would evolve. And so rather than try to do that kind of planning in the abstract, we said this entitlement's available for that site. But the detail, the phasing, some of the other public realm improvements have to be developed before you can access that.
So just, I know we could probably spend all afternoon on this. Let me just observe that there's a policy question about whether we would waive the master plan requirements. I also think there's a drafting problem because the way it's actually written is not how we're actually talking about it. So I would suggest that sometime later today we come back with new language. Yeah, it makes it clear. We may accept or reject it, but let's be clear about our intent, which is there's a limited circumstance where you could come to council to seek council approval to waive a requirement, not that the requirement for a master plan will be waived, because that's directive.
Yeah, I like that suggestion. Let's keep going and get the rest of the amendments.
Then we can debate the policy question, but
Correct.
Let's make sure the language has the protection.
And we have a lot of people queued up.
You don't do
speak,
it without so. Council approval.
Let's take the other. Why don't you walk us through the other two amendments?
So there's a little more than two, but we'll go through them quickly. So one is an amendment to an action item from the West Quadrant Plan. You took testimony on the West Quadrant about this, and at the time we were looking at the Morrison Bridgehead West Side, the ramps that are leading off of it to NATO Parkway. The suggestion was that there would be a feasibility study looking at removing or reconfiguring the ramps. PBOT has done analysis already that has shown that.
Steve's not here to answer this question, but perhaps you could just clarify. It's one thing to do a feasibility study. It's another to determine who pays for any of the work, which as I understand it, may benefit, you know, a development that's going on there, but may not make the list of priorities for the city and its transportation. So if we were to adopt this, we're not implicitly agreeing that the city's on the hook for any portion of this other than the study. Is that correct?
True. Okay. And that was something that the county reminded us as well, because it is their facility at this point, and they're saying that they would want to be obviously a part of this as well. So any conversation is premature about what happens there. But they have studied enough to know that removing is not feasible. They need to make sure there is a connection with NATO Parkway from the ramp, from the bridge. So what they'd like to do is change the language, and this was worked out with the CEIC and the Portland Freight Committee to their satisfaction to say that we really would be studying the feasibility of reconfiguring, and that we would maintain southbound freeway access from the Morrison Bridge for freight trips originating from the Central East Side.
I'm actually less concerned about stepping on the toes of our friends at the county and more concerned that by doing an assessment, we're impliedly saying that we're prepared to fund one of the options, since I'm not entirely clear after talking to Steve that this is a city priority.
And this does not commit us to that. The next one would be, there was some language on a page of the document that was really introducing kind of at a high level some of the things the plan was going to do. And one of them was dealing with the needs to balance multimodal transportation. Just the current language was a little uncomfortable, some involved, so we've just proposed some minor tweaks to that language to make sure that it's not really setting a priority that active transportation becomes the primary mode in the district, because it is a freight district after all. Not that we're not going to still do the active transportation improvements. And then the other was that we would be adding, there's a number of streets. In most freight districts, every street's basically equal. They're all freight district streets. There may be a slight hierarchy on some main arterials, but in this district, there's a lot of other streets that have a higher need in terms of getting people north, south, or east, west to the district. So what's been proposed by PBOT is the addition of a couple priority or main truck streets in the district. We wanted to add Northeast Davis to that mix. It had been overlooked in the plans. We want to add that. And then the last two amendments are some that were offered by ODOT, and they're basically really recognizing that actions to improve turn movements, left-hand turn movements northbound off of Powell into the district, would need to be done, with ODOT approval, which we would obviously agree with.
So, Mayor, I move 1, 2, 3, 5 through 9. As a package to place them on the table.
Okay. Is there a second? Further discussion about that motion? Then a roll call on that motion, please.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Hales?
Aye.
And just to be clear, if at some point BPS comes forth with a substitute amendment 4, then the council would consider that for further action.
And just to be clear, we're going to work on this during the testimony and try to bring something back today, right, so that you could see.
Good.
To be further clear, I have to leave at 5:15.
Got it. We may not get this all done today. We got a lot of people here. All right, let's move on. Thank you to a panel, please, of Dan Yates, Skip Newberry, and Valeria Ramirez. Assuming they're all here. 2 out of 3, anyway.
Dan, I just have to ask you, on one of the slides we saw earlier, there was this good-looking guy sitting at a table in the back.
That was me.
Are you related to him? That was you. Okay.
Good afternoon. Welcome.
Good afternoon. I want to thank Troy Doss and Joe Zender for outstanding leadership of the Southeast Quadrant 2035 Committee. I'm excited about many of the proposed changes to the CID, but I am concerned about the details of those changes. For example, the proposed 2035 plan changes the zoning around OMSI Station for the land south of Crothers Street to EXD from heavy industrial. A group of amazing PSU grad students last week presented to me concepts for the Portland Spirit 1.5-acre parcel, and those concepts included increasing our current building square footage from 5,000 square feet up to 300,000 square feet. I asked them if they were aware of the approved Clinton Station plan that has Crothers Street, the only access road for the Opera McCoy Millwork and the Portland Spirit, reduced from its current 2 lanes with parking and full bike lanes to a single lane with super wide bike lanes from 4th to the river. They were not aware of the changes, as it's not incorporated in the 2035 plan. I recently informed Troy about the Clinton Station plan impact on Crothers Street. and he informed me that the Spirit, the Opera, and McCoy Land would not be able to take full advantage of the new EXD zoning if the capacity of Carruthers Street is reduced. This means the work for our committee is thwarted by a separate planning process resulting in all this land directly next to a new multi-purpose transit station blocked from reaching its full development potential. Other details that concern me, including updating our 1987 Greenway Code to reflect several U.S. Supreme Court rulings, Ninth Circuit Court rulings, State of Oregon Goal 15 Greenway rules, and the Federal Marine Transportation Security Act of 2002. I am also concerned about freight movement within the CID and access to our interstate road systems. I know some think water transit is a whimsical idea, but I'm sure many of those people also believe the return of the streetcar was equally unrealistic. The river is our last available right-of-way, and as the city grows, water transit will return to Portland. We need to prepare for it now. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for your work on this.
Just to clarify that the concern about Clinton Street, which planning process is that in? I mean,
Carruthers Street? That was in the Clinton's station process, which I did not pay attention to because I am next to the OMSI station process. They planned Carruthers all the way to the river in that process. And I did not hear about it until I read on bikeportland.org that our street was going to be taken away from us. And then I started asking questions. And last week or 10 days ago, when I realized that, oh my God, our development potential, I was basically told it's going to happen, put up with it. And then I found out that the amount of development on our property is so significant. How in the world am I going to support 300,000 square feet of potential development with a one-lane road, which they're basically proposing putting no yellow line down the middle, building very wide bike lanes, and having the traffic going up and down Carruthers weave around each other.
So but that, has that specific transportation design or plan been formally adopted?
Yes.
By who?
You.
Really?
Really?
From my understanding, the Clinton Street plan is, well, I've been told that it's going to.
I don't think so.
Art Pierce and I have had several discussions about this, and he's told me it's going to happen.
I don't think it's been here yet. Okay.
Well, there are transportation people in the room.
All right. We'll get clarity on that, but appreciate you flagging it. So,
absolutely.
Thank you.
And we've got a lot of material here. Could you just remind me, are you alluding to the marine overlay issue?
I'm just alluding to the fact that the Greenway Code requires unrestricted public access to property along the river, which is in direct disagreement with the actual state Greenway Code, which requires marine-related and marine-dependent users are exempt from the setback and exempt from building the trail. The Supreme Court rulings have ruled solidly against the Greenway, actually imposed certain rules for taking of the trail. The Ninth Circuit has leveled some large fines in the millions of dollars against Eugene and another city in Oregon for improperly accessing the trail or extracting the trail. And the Marine Transportation Security Act absolutely forbids unrestricted public access across a marine entity like myself. I have the last parcel in the entire city that I can operate from, which was determined by TriMet when they tried to move us for the bridge project. So we're... If we're going to have marine commerce on our river, we need to recognize there are rules beyond the Greenway Code.
Thank you. Welcome.
Great. Thanks. Mayor Hales and members of City Council, my name is Skip Newberry, president of the Technology Association of Oregon, also a member of the Stakeholder Advisory Committee. And first want to start by thanking Troy and Joe and Susan for their work during this process, and the rest of city staff as well that were involved. TAO represents about 300 tech companies, which includes both software and manufacturing in the region. One thing that I think is really important about this plan that and is a big reason why we as an association support it is it recognizes, I think, really well the changing nature of our economy and its connection to the employment opportunity area specifically in this district. With a more modern definition of industry, which includes standalone software companies as well as companies that have a mix of software and manufacturing as part of what they do, they're increasingly choosing the Central East Side. And a large majority of tech workers already live on the East Side. So as companies continue to expand and they're looking for relatively affordable places that are larger for them to grow into, The Central East Side represents a great tool in our economic development toolbox to help retain those companies in the region and as they continue to grow. The extension of the rules allowing software developers alongside manufacturers in much of the district as more office space comes online, I think that's important. An issue that some of our members flagged that are located in the district is related to transportation and safety. And I think the plan does a good job of noting the issue around parking congestion as a safety issue. So use of more efficient sort of lots for off-street parking and PDC's review of parking options is going to be important as contemplated by the plan. Also, the increasing use of pedestrians and bicycle traffic through the district and then within it. And looking at ways, as Troy alluded to help reduce detention between freight, which is also a necessary use in the area, and some of these other increasing alternative modes of transit. And I think the plan does a good job of that as well. Finally, I just want to mention that the economic development opportunity with the Innovation District, and in particular the catalytic anchor that OMSI represents, is really huge for the region. There's few cities that have a downtown core like we do between the OMSI opportunity and Southwest Waterfront that offer such a varied array of both large sites for corporate campus relocation as well as small maker spaces and everything in between. And the connectivity from a transportation system that connects the two is phenomenal. So the fact that this contemplates in a very central way the opportunity that OMSI presents is very important, I think, for a lot of our members as they look to this region as sort of another phase of growth as tech continues to grow.
If I could just ask you one question.
Yep.
Having toured a number of those sites in the Central East Side and seen these tech companies, software folks, you remind us maybe, and many of them are refugees from other cities where they got priced out or something happened. Can you just remind us, in just roughly, what are the top three competitive advantages that we have right now in that sector?
Yeah, in terms of just one qualifying or clarifying question, within the tech sector or within the district in terms of competitive advantages?
Well, the district, if it's narrower.
Yeah, I think with the district, one thing that's exciting is the older sort of warehouse spaces and the aesthetic that presents. A lot of the software folks love the sort of variety that exists within the region. And the other thing is that you have to keep in mind a lot of technology companies, especially software, are developing solutions for other markets. Not for tech specifically, but for healthcare, for manufacturing, et cetera. So the closer they are to the users of the technology, that's where innovation occurs. And so to be able to have a working sort of manufacturing area with a lot of industrial uses is really intriguing because it's a potential to be close to your customer and to prototype and test. And I think as well that having spaces that can allow small batch manufacturing and prototyping is intriguing, and I know that you know ADX is a big player in that realm, and so those are some of the things that are really attractive. I also think that the proximity to the East Side, where, as I mentioned, a lot of the tech talent lives, they have a lot of different routes into that district by bike, walking, public transit. And I think as that region grows, we'll have to be mindful of making sure those routes continue to be strong and safe.
Thanks. Thank you both very much. Okay, our next panel we want to call is Susan Lindsay, Nancy Stuber, and Sue Pierce. Good afternoon. Welcome.
Hi, I guess I'm on. I'm Susan Lindsay. I'm co-chair of the Buckman Community Association. And I think I'd like to echo a lot of what Dawn had to say about this process and about the planning staff. I've been on a number of these committees over the year as a stakeholder or whatever I am, you know, a representative, really, for a neighborhood. And this was a very good process. I'm just regretful that east of 12th, doesn't have that same ability to bring together the stakeholders in such a way. The planning staff, in particular, Troy and Joe, and under Susan's leadership, they really listened to members of the committee. They really did. And they went back and they made changes and they brought that back to us, you know, month after month, and we went through this. And you know, there were some strong personalities on that committee, and I might be guilty of being one of those myself. But as we, you know, move towards turning this district over to the next generation, and I think that's exactly what we're doing here, I think this plan is a compromise, and it's a good compromise. I just want to focus on a couple of things. One, I, too, opposed Amendment Number 4, which is turning into kind of a sticky wicket. So I'm seeing that you're going to discuss that further, and I agreed with Commissioner Fritz that going back to the original language is probably the simplest thing to do at this time. And second, like Co-Chair Hansen, I really want to support the Green Loop. And in particular, I'd like to advance the idea that, you know, that with the existing zoning, even without any change, there's a tremendous amount of potential for a lot of housing in the district. And I think, and people passing through the district all the time. And so this idea of a cohesive Green Loop and areas where people can be in a very park deficient area where there's going to be a lot of housing, we want to make sure that we continue to focus on a Green Loop. And also, I would add that it would be wonderful for those of us who have lived next to the Willamette River our entire lives and are thrilled that I've been swimming in it even when it was dirty, but now I really like to swim in it, if we could look at the idea of developing an option, especially if we have housing in the OMSI area, why don't we have some kind of a beach where people could get into the water? Because right now it's quite difficult to do that with the riprap. And finally, I would just like to say that the expansion of the EOS into the IG is going to make for a lot of changes. I mean, there's going to be a lot of retail. There's going to be a lot of increased employment, which is good. And there's going to be a lot of conflicts that are going to take place with the increased housing. And so we have to continue to kind of work together and pay attention to it and listen to the concerns like that Dan Yates just brought up about Carruthers, you know, that these property owners have been shepherding this district for decades, and they deserve to be heard as we go through these big processes, as we welcome in the next generation with their jobs and their energy and their vision of what's taking place here. Thank you.
Thank you, Susan. Thanks for your help. Nancy, welcome.
Mayor Hales and members of the commission, I'm Nancy Stuber, and I'm the president and CEO at OMSI. And I thank you for the opportunity to present our position on the plan. We've participated in this planning process for over 3 years as a member of the CEIC, the Stakeholder Advisory Committee, and with the Planning and Sustainability Commission hearings. And I, too, commend the staff on the thoroughness of the process and on their tenacity. OMSI is very pleased to support the Planning Commission's recommendations to the Council. Those recommendations rezone the OMSI parcels to EX with housing. However, the housing would only be permitted as a conditional use and through a master plan process. The conditional use criteria will reflect the current conditional use criteria for housing in the EG zone, and we look forward to working with BPS as they recommend a list of conditions under the new zoning. We support this recommendation for several reasons. First, we currently have the right to build housing as a conditional use on a large area of the site that's currently zoned EG. These properties are in the OMSI station area, immediately adjacent to the Telecom Crossing. And so with EG zoning, the city has already determined that a limited amount of housing subject to conditions is appropriate in this location. This current residential allowance was provided by code even before the city's significant investment in the new transit infrastructure and before it developed this exciting vision for mixed use and a vibrant waterfront in the OMSI area. So the recommendation appropriately preserves OMSI's current allowance for residential conditional use. The recommendation also supports the language and intent of the Southeast Quadrant Plan to develop mixed-use, high-density, vibrant and safe station areas that complement but do not conflict with industrial operations. and to maximize the development opportunity presented by new transit to have higher employment densities and a diverse mix of uses. The recommendation delivers on these objectives by allowing for a vibrant use of mix of uses that will represent and respect nearby industrial uses. And then finally, the BPS recommendation leverages both that investment in the Tillicum Crossing and OMSI's long history of community contribution as a major employer, an anchor business, and a public attraction in the Central East Side for more than 20 years. Conditional housing is a tool to help develop an employment district that is diverse, market-driven, and attracts investment. This is an unprecedented opportunity for the Central East Side to capitalize on all of the assets to create the signature district for the city. So we appreciate the thoughtful deliberations of the Planning Commission on this matter, and we request that the city accept their recommendation to permit EX with housing as conditional use in the OMSI area. The remainder of our comments are contained in our written testimony that you have. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for your participation.
Susan, welcome.
Good afternoon. I'm Susan Pierce, the chair of the Hosford Abernathy Neighborhood Association, and my comments are representing that body. The or hand is an is the as you may know. We, as along with everyone else, appreciate the hard work of the staff and the volunteers on the SAC who worked to put together the Southeast Quadrant. I was the representative from hand to the SAC. We have long recognized the importance of the Central East Side Industrial District, which is the Southeast Quadrant, as a place for innovation and creation of goods and services, unique within, as we heard recently from Commissioner Blumenauer, it is unique within the United States to have this type of a district in the central city. It represents jobs, and I think the gentleman in the last panel who talked about the how quickly things can get from the central city to use points of use. The following headlines that I'm reading from what you have in your hands are hands matters of import as the nearby residential district, in not a particular order of importance. One is that there be protection for the existing homes, the older homes that have been in the industrial district since before it was an industrial district, that they be protected from the conditional use, non-use curse that makes financing for any project difficult to impossible. Next, that the EX zone or EXD zone, that happened in the Clinton Triangle, and that it would allow mixed use, mixed income, commercial and residential development. I am thoroughly confused now after the conversation about Amendment 4, but what I do want to emphasize is that HAND expects to be at the table of any discussion about how that develops. We do definitely support the idea of mixed income, mixed use in that site. There also should be open spaces and public spaces within the triangle. It was important to HAND members. We do not want to find ourselves overwhelmed or looking at our westward vision be a solid mass of brick wall. We don't want to wake up one morning and find that to be the case. That is a result of high building restrictions as well as high FAR, that suddenly there's a wall of brick. So we would ask that things be designed in the way that they were in the South Waterfront so that there are view lines, view corridors. Am I making myself clear? The planned infrastructure project at Southeast Powell in Milwaukee, and may I say that quite some time ago I said, has anybody talked to ODOT? That structure, project will help a lot to make access to the Clinton Triangle improved. However, it may also worsen an already very difficult situation in terms of safety for pedestrians and even bicycles and even automobile cross traffic on 11th and 12th, and demands for traffic management on Southeast 11th and 12th. It's critical. We think a light, a traffic light at Harrison is the minimum of what can be done. We have some other thoughts, and we would want to be part of any conversation about what takes place there. The concept of the Greenway is appealing to all of us. The conversation should not end about where it is and what it looks like. It's not complete. There's much to be discussed. We have some ideas that are kind of bubbling up through the neighborhood, and we want that to continue beyond the adoption of this, the quadrant, what it will look like and where it should, the alignment should be, and we want to be at the table. We have long supported access to the Willamette River for the multiple uses such as boating. Susan Lindsay swim. We have a hand board member who also is a swimmer. Use of watercraft. We fully support that, along with the preservation of natural resources and the habitat that the river provides. We also support river transit as long as those other uses can be protected. We have for years worked collaboratively with the Central Eastside Industrial District, and in general, we support the comments that you received from Debbie Kitchen.
So, Susan, thank you, as always, for thoughtful testimony and detailed. And I, since we're trying to simplify things today, I want to make sure I understand one of the points that you raised about affordable housing at the Clinton Triangle. Now, Dan, would you correct me if I'm wrong, but part of that packet, that parcel, is a fire bureau property. And I believe you've already either stated your intention or we've taken some action to put a covenant on that property so that it will, in fact, be developed as affordable housing and then would therefore be subject to the set-aside. Is that correct?
Correct.
So that's, I just wanted to make sure that we're clear on that. And that's not the entire triangle, but it's at least been decided as to the fire bureau portion of the triangle that, in fact, it will be prioritized for affordable housing.
And I think I've said that in my, I didn't say that earlier, but I said that in my notes, that the Central Eastside Urban Renewal Area has an 18% as opposed to the otherwise 30% set aside, and this is a good place to spend that money.
Susan, we like to say it's a floor, not a ceiling.
It's a floor, not a ceiling. That's perfect.
the set aside, so at least 18%.
At least 18%.
Thank you all very much. Thank you. Okay, let's call one more panel of four people, and that is Peter Stark, either Brad or Jonathan Molson, Ian Studi, and either Deborah Dunn or Pia Welch, whoever's here in each case representing your organization.
Either Brad or Jonathan.
Either Brad or Jonathan.
It's come to that. I mean,
no, not going to get two for the price of one. We're going to take
We'll take any member of the Molson family. We'll let them sort it out over the kitchen table.
All right. Welcome. I think, Peter, you may be on first.
Peter Stark, I'm here representing the Central Eastside Industrial Council. I'm also representing the Transportation Parking Advisory Committee, which is the TMA for the Central Eastside, and that was my role on the SAC. First of all, I thank you for taking testimony, and I also want to make sure to give an extended thank you to the planning staff, Susan, Joe, and Troy, for a momentous effort with a number of staff, including other bureaus, PBOT in particular, BES in particular. This was a lot of work. It was about 3 years of effort for many of us and a lot of time and commitment. And having said that, I want to say that this is really good work. I mean, we should really applaud what they've done. And I sit on a lot of different committees. This one was one of the most interesting. And I guess maybe I'm a little bit more outspoken than others, but I think that the end result is pretty close to where we need to be. So all of the amendments that have been proposed have actually addressed many of the concerns that those of us on the Central East Side Industrial Council have weighed in on, including the Morrison Bridge ramp. Clearly, we're concerned that we have the ability to maintain freight access from the bridge. We would add that including southbound access, northbound access is also important on the Needle Parkway, but that's implicit in the way that this thing will be designed. The language of page 3.3, item 4, talking about active transportation, I think the language is good. The amendment addresses the concern, which I think was just poorly phrased, but we didn't want to lose the priority of freight in the district by placing active transportation above it. We want to have active transportation. We just didn't want to forego the freight piece. The Green Loop is an interesting one, and I think the reason that the Central East Side spent so much time trying to get that language correct is not just that, I mean, we support the Green Loop, and so do the neighborhoods. It's to make sure that there's an opportunity to explore different ways to apply it in the district. And it may not be a single alignment. It may be that we have the pedestrian piece of it along our housing and commercial corridor where it would be appropriate, and we put the bike lane somewhere else. Maybe it's on 7th where it currently is. But if you put it all in one spot, that could have an impact on freight. We just want some flexibility to figure out how to make it work so it works successfully. A couple of other pieces noted in the CEIC letter that weren't mentioned specifically. The marine commercial overlay, I just want to mention that I strongly support the ability of the river to accommodate both freight and commerce. And I think that with the demise of the CRC, the city should be looking at maybe some kind of a system that gets Vancouver workers down to Portland and vice versa. I think it would be a benefit. The marine commerce overlay could accomplish that, or some other tool to allow, you know, more access to the river for freight and commuter service. The EXD expansion, that was also mentioned in the letter. There is concern about continuing to erode the industrial sanctuary south of Division Place. We can understand adding EXD around the station area, but moving farther south all the way to Powell Boulevard takes that whole area that's currently IG1 potentially with an EOS overlay away from the table, and that's in the letter. And then the accessory parking, which is something that the TPAC, my committee, is working on. We hope that there will be, some clear language, hopefully today, that will allow us to open up the ability for private parking lots and lots that are currently vacant but potential lots to use for parking. We're desperate. There's a lot of growth in the district. It's wonderful, but we're going through growing pains. And I think that it really comes down to devil in the details. I mean, we're reaching the point where we need to figure out those pieces. A couple of just final points, road changes. Even subtle changes have a significant impact to freight. I'll give a couple examples. Taylor Avenue or Taylor Street, there was to accommodate the GO Block development, there was a loss of about 2 foot of lane on that street. And this went in front of council. The problem is that impact may have forced that owner to vacate that site and find another location elsewhere. So I'd like to work with Steve Novick and PBOT to see if we can maybe adjust the standards so that we try to maintain certain access rather than reducing the lanes. Another one is Taylor. That's already been mentioned by Dan Yates. And we've met with Art Pierce and his staff, and we've met with PBOT a few times. I think this plan came through when they developed the light rail alignment. I think that was part of that plan, and that's where it was overlooked, but I'm not sure. The problem is by reducing it to a single lane where traffic is trying to pass each other is a potential nightmare, and you could have, you know, bicyclists getting hit or ongoing traffic getting hit, and if you expand to the EXD, it makes it undevelopable. So there's a conflict there, and maybe the city needs to buy some right-of-way. I mean, I don't know, but there's got to be another solution found that doesn't reduce the opportunity to develop. Troy's comments on adjacency concerns is real, and I think that this will come down to the detailing aspect. We need to protect the ability for industrial businesses to do business in the district, and I think you already mentioned when you talked to Debbie that right now just saying that there's an understanding may not be enough. We have to have authority when a complaint is raised to be able to say, yeah, but they're doing everything legally. It might be a little bit noisy, but they're allowed to do that. We're really sorry you're in an industrial district. We need something, I don't know if it's a policy, but something that allows those businesses to continue to do business. Lastly, I'd like to say that the TMA, the TPAC, has been a successful tool, and I thank council for supporting that effort and the policy to allow a TMA. And I just think that, you know, we're kind of an experiment. We're lagging behind what the Lloyd District's been able to do, but we've had a lot of successes. So thank you.
Thank you.
Just on the noise issue tomorrow, are you aware of the proposed change to the noise regulations to put EX into the commercial type zone restrictions?
No.
So there's a hearing tomorrow, and you're invited back.
Yeah. So what happens when you have EXD adjacent to an IG1?
That's a good question.
Good question.
That's something that we'll be talking about tomorrow.
Because you know,
I'm expecting. Time is going by. I'm expecting it to be a first reading tomorrow that we'll have some more discussion. So you could maybe watch from home.
But, thank you.
Invite you to participate in that discussion because it was one of my questions about how would the proposed change affect the Central East Side. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Who's next? Jonathan, go ahead.
All right. Thank you, Mayor Hales, or Jonathan Malson. Thank you, Mayor Hales and commissioners. I'm going to keep my comments pretty short. I want to echo what all the other previous stakeholder advisory committee members have said about BPS staff. It's really been a pretty amazing process. I think we started seemingly pretty far apart, and we really came together with what I think is a pretty measured plan to expand employment opportunities in what really is an employment-centered district. And, you know, on behalf of my father and I, we've had an incredible opportunity to work in the Central East Side and develop, you know, close to 500,000 square feet in the existing employment opportunity sub-area, which is kind of why I'm up here and talking, is to kind of promote the expansion of the EOS across the district. We've seen just tremendous job growth. Not only in our buildings, but in other buildings that were, you know, more or less abandoned in the district, coming in with new industries. And these are, you know, in large part, our industrial users. We have, you know, incredible companies filled with peers of mine that are, creating code, building software, websites, prototyping, actual hardware. It's a really diverse array of companies that we've been able to get to know in our buildings and seen locate in adjacent buildings. And for the most part, those companies that we do business with and we come across really enjoy the kind of grittiness of the district. They don't take they don't have issues with the adjacency of industrial users. You have a coffee shop next to Empire Rubber, which is very much an industrial user. There's a lot of, I think, you know, positive things that are happening in the district and not a lot of conflict. And I think that's evidence in what Troy said relative to, the lack of, you know, kind of this exodus of industrial users out of the existing EOS. So I just wanted to, you know, emphasize, I think, the opportunity that we have with the expansion of the EOS to get more growing businesses that are really, you know, new dynamic industries, both, you know, again, digital media, software. TAO is in the district now in one of our buildings. So I think it's a real opportunity to expand employment, industrial and employment centered district. And I also think that, you know, somewhat counter to our own interests, the expansion of the EOS is going to bring on a lot of competition for new developments in the district that honestly could drive down rents and allow the district to maintain some affordability for industrial, more traditional industrial users and makers. So I think this idea that the expansion of EOS is going to lead to a wholesale gentrification of the district is not accurate. I think it actually could allow for a continued and longer-term affordability throughout the district with more supply. So, thank you.
Thanks for articulating that argument. I know I've been weighing that one carefully myself, and I know we're going to hear from people about it. But you really believe that the expansion of supply of non-maker space, if you will allow the maker space to remain?
I think so. Yeah, okay. Absolutely.
Good. Thank you. Appreciate that. Yeah, take me next. Just pull that microphone down a little closer to you.
Pia Welch, Vice Chair of the Portland Freight Committee. I know we're running out of time. I know you can read our letter. I want to say thanks for consideration for some of these amendments and taking into consideration our changes. I look forward to continuing to work with Troy Doss and other people as we work out a lot of the details. Carruthers Street is a safety issue. The loading and unloading, everyone talks about parking and they forget about the loading and unloading of materials and how that's done or not done. And so, again, look forward to further refining this plan.
Thank you. Thanks for your help.
Sure.
Ian, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor and City Council. I'm here today.
Push button again, just oh. Push and let go.
Okay, nope. Is that working?
Not no, yet. Carlo will bring, in, right. bring in the reserves.
Try another mic.
There we go.
Another one.
Oh, I see. There we go. It was running out of power.
I guess so.
Well, hopefully we won't. Thanks for waiting for my comments. I appreciate the opportunity to speak today. I'm Ian Studi. I'm the chair of the Bicycle Advisory Committee, and I'm here to offer some comment from the committee. First of all, like everyone else, we really want to acknowledge the efforts of PBA and the BPS staff. Their efforts to address, you know, future transportation and mobility needs within the Central East Side are critical, and we see this plan as a tremendous step forward for the district. The plan as presented today largely reflects, I think, our shared vision for a future Portland where people are safe no matter what mode they choose. However, in the spirit of aligning this plan with a shared commitment towards safety, there are some there's one minor change we'd like to propose, and this is sort of house cleaning. And I think, Peter, you mentioned that the language is a little awkward to Chapter 5, Section T33. This really relates a lot also to the city's Vision Zero strategy. As presented today, T33 states that to pursue implementation actions that enhance the safety of cyclists, but that do not conflict with efficient freight mobility. Unfortunately, this statement can easily be read as directly prioritizing the movement of freight over the safety of people biking. I think we can agree that simply isn't acceptable when we're talking about prioritizing safety at every level in our city. We propose that this section be amended to read, pursue implementation actions that enhance the safety and comfort of people bicycling while avoiding impact to the essential movement of all other modes. This proposed language is identical to language that we've agreed on with the Portland Freight Committee and the Pedestrian Advisory Committee in relation to the TSP. I know this is kind of a minor kind of housekeeping issue in some ways, but it's one that's important, especially given recent conversations here at City Council. I want to underscore that we're very supportive of the Southeast Quadrant Plan as a whole. The minor change to language around transportation will bring the plan into proper alignment with our shared vision for a safer, more prosperous, and more livable city. I want to thank again the PBOT and BPS staff and members of the Planning and Sustainability Commission, as well as all the stakeholders involved. Their hard work and commitment has really resulted in an excellent plan. I also just want to add that our committee is also very supportive of the Green Loop. We've looked at it quite a bit. We'll be looking at it as this progress on the Green Loop continues. And I want to underscore that dovetail with some of what Peter mentioned, we are really excited about the opportunity of the Green Loop and open to the idea that it may be not particularly one alignment. But I also want to add that it really should be something that works in concert with a network that serves bicycle and pedestrian movement. But that the Green Loop is not necessarily the only method by which we will move people through this district. As Troy mentioned, 23% of trips by bike in the adjacent neighborhood to this area, that's phenomenal. It also is, when we look at our goals from the Bicycle Master Plan to the sustainability plan for the city, we know that we have a target for those numbers to go up. And this district and others around it will have to carry a great deal of that weight based on just the geography of our city. So I think we have to look very closely at the Central East Side and how it will meet our safety needs as those numbers continue to grow. Thank you.
I can make a suggestion because we're going to lose Commissioner Fritz, probably a quorum, and we're going to go to another hearing date. On what you describe as a housekeeping matter, I'd love to see that in writing, and I'd like to get some commentary from BPS on that and the stakeholders, and it sounds like we could take that up at the...
Yeah, I've started flagging issues. And, I know they have too,
I think I'd like to see the specific language and then understand how, if at all, it impacts the freight mobility piece and how it fits with our Vision Zero. But it's easier for us to do that if we have something in writing and get some commentary on that.
Certainly. Yeah, happy to provide that.
Thank you very much. Thank you all. Okay, let's go to the sign-up sheet, please.
Okay, I believe we have 25 people left. The first three, please come on up, are Willie Lewinson, Ken Clock, and Kelly Roy, and they'll be followed by Brad Molson, Mike Redman, and Jose Gonzalez.
Good afternoon. Go ahead, Will.
Good afternoon. Hey, guys. Nice to see you. It's been a pretty heady conversation about business and commerce today. I had a chance to look over this document, and I'm not sure who the audience is intended for, but it's, I always find it interesting how there's a picture of the Willamette River in all these documents, and there was one page dedicated to the Willamette River waterfront, and on that page there was no discussion of access to the Willamette. So I have a lot of points that I'm going to submit that are kind of housekeeping items, that are just suggestions about how to make the document better in terms of how to create better access to the Willamette. I felt the central plan did a really good job of really putting intention out there to create access, and I feel like although there are some points, it isn't as pointed and directed as the central effort, and I'm hoping that we can take some of the language from that document and carry it forward and make sure there's more intention. It was great to hear the neighborhoods speak out and say they'd like to have beaches and better access to the Willamette. Really want to emphasize that hopefully you guys will take the opportunity to read over the comments that we made, and so that over the last 11 years, there's been seven planning efforts over the last 11 years related to the Willamette River. So the question is, why aren't these things happening? Why aren't there greater access? This is an opportunity to put some concrete things in this document that will hopefully allow that to happen. And there is a lot of talk about habitat in regards to the Willamette, which is awesome. But I would suggest that that should coincide with access for people, because if there's not a corresponding amount of access as there is to habitat, then less enlightened people might just trample through these areas. As it is right now, swimming is occurring in downtown Portland actively. I mean, people are swimming off the light boat dock on the south side of the Hawthorne Bridge, and the north side of the fire boat dock. They're at Audrey McCall Beach. It's happening now. So I would also emphasize that one last point.